want. Yes, to learn how to get what you really want. You know, getting what you want out of life is quite an amazing thing. Of course, it's very hard to get what you want out of life when you don't know what you want out of life or when you're confused with what you want out of life. I mean, what if one of the things you want out of life is lots of money? And a lot of people say, I wish I could just win the lottery. But we do these studies on the people who won the lottery, and they are miserable after they win the lottery. They're certainly not happy folks. But you would be, wouldn't you? Well, sometimes the reason that people want to win money is because they want to avoid a different feeling, the feeling of personal poverty. When you feel impoverished in your soul, in your heart, when you feel like you don't have enough, sometimes money seems like the only solution. Knowing this, the world is always exploiting people about their desire to have money, and we have workshops and seminars and books and real estate investors and people telling you to do this to get rich and do this to get rich and do this to get rich because they know you feel impoverished. They are appealing to the people who feel like they have the least inside. I invited today on the air with us somebody who took a different approach. My kind of guy, Dale Goldstein. Dale Goldstein wrote a book called Heart Work, H-E-A-R-T-W-O-R-K, which is subtitled How to Get What You Really Want. But it's tricky because what you really want may be what you have to identify. Well, anyway, Dale, in this book, offers a number of guidelines to finding what you want and finding how to get to where you want. And it's kind of a really pretty, nice, enjoyable, pleasant, and profound book. Dale, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you, Armand. I'm very happy to be here.
Yes, I'm glad you're here, too, and thanks for making the trip down. Why did you write the book?
I wrote the book for a couple of reasons. I think the main reason is very simple. It was time. I'd been doing this work for 25 years, been thinking about writing a book for 5 years, and finally I couldn't not write the book. In terms of a purpose for the book, I would say it's to let more people know than I had been able to reach by working with people in one-on-one and the workshops that I do about the methodology, the tools that I have developed over the years that helps people get what they really, really want.
Well, getting what they really, really want, let's talk about it. You have a 9-step process, don't you?
I have a number of different tools. The classical heart work is one of them, and I guess that's a 9-step process that you're referring to, yes.
Okay, so how do you, first of all, how do you identify what you really want?
That's the hardest part for most people.
All right, so let me ask you a simplest question. How do you buy the book? You go to the store and it costs you $20. No. How do you identify it? It's a really difficult question.
It is. Most of us, like you were talking about to open the show, most of us don't really know what we really want. Part of that is because we haven't been able to find a way in our lives to get what we really want, and so we've just assumed on some level that we can't have it. So we look outside ourselves for other things to fill that hole inside of us. For example, money, that's the one example you brought up, that's one thing. Other people turn to alcohol or drugs or gambling. But ultimately, there is this emptiness inside all of us that comes from having separated from ourselves. As you talk about, you know, on your website, things happen to us that are too painful or too frightening to deal with as we're growing. And so we separate from those things and there becomes a gap inside of us. And we try to fill that gap with things outside when the only way is really to go inside and heal the wounds and fill the gap with ourselves or with what you might call God.
My guest is Dale Goldstein, and what we're talking about, in case you just tuned in, is how to identify and define what you really want. The issue here that Dale is addressing himself to is what happens to us as kids. As kids, as children, we realize that whoever we really are is not convenient for the people who are in charge of us.
Right.
We realize that, you know, what we feel, if we get angry, if we become too ambitious, if we're too energetic, it's not very comfortable to the people around us. And to one level or another, people say to us, don't be yourself.
Right.
Now, if they say don't be yourself, and you follow that rule and you say, okay, the best way to get through life is I'm going to be cute. And therefore, I'll just be cute and everybody will like me for being cute, or I'll be powerful, or I'll be strong, or I'll be weak, or I'll be helpless. Whatever the role is you play, you have abandoned your true self. Now, so when the question comes up, how do you find what you really want? You have to ask, who is it that's asking? Is it the guy who abandoned his real self who's asking, how do I find what I really want? Or do we go back and reclaim that original self? Now, what you're talking about, Dale, is a very courageous step that most people don't do, and certainly most men don't take it on.
True.
What's step number one? I mean, you know, who am I? Am I live or am I Memorex? You know, I'm curious.
Well, I think most people start at some point in their lives by realizing that something's not right, something's not working, that they feel incomplete or they're suffering. And at that point, they have a decision to make. Do they want to go outside themselves and try to distract themselves from their suffering, or do they want to try to find a resolution to their suffering? The only way to find that resolution is to go in and find out what caused the suffering. So,
go in, by the way. I want you to know, remember, you're a therapist.
Yes, right.
Go into people means go into the shopping mall.
Yeah.
I mean, when I just...
Thank you.
Good.
So when I say go in, I mean look inside oneself. And the classical heart work process is a very direct, in fact, it's the most direct way that I have encountered in 35 years of looking at what, of ways of working with one's being. It's very direct because it works, it asks people to focus their attention into the place in their body where the split lives, where they've separated from themselves. So what I do is I start by asking people, essentially, what do you want or what's bothering you? You know, what would you like help with? And finding the place in their body where that particular issue creates a kind of disturbance, that's where I direct their attention, right into that place.
All right. So now, this is terrific. Now what you're saying is we're going to not only say, let's find out what your feeling is, right? Now your dissatisfaction, that's one part. But look at the part of your body that will manifest this struggle, this piece. Now, how would you find the part of your body that will do it? It could be anything from your genitals to could be your heart, to your shoulders.
Right.
Is that the way people would find it? What do they find?
What
parts of the bodies usually hold the most conflict? The stomach does, I know
yes,
for sure.
Exactly. It's generally between the neck and the groin, rarely in the head, rarely in the limbs. And the way that people find it is they just pay attention. They've gotten relaxed. I ask them to relax to begin with. So then once they've relaxed, they can start to feel where they're not relaxed. And that's the place where they look, in the place where they are most unrelaxed or tense, or where they feel energy blocked in their body or some kind of disturbance around the particular issue that they came to get help with.
So you would find, through relaxing, you would be able to identify certain tensions that are going to stay there no matter what.
Yeah.
I used to work with a man named Peter Hogan. I'm sure you never heard of him. He was my mentor. And Peter said that according to where the tension is, you can determine what part of a person's life it took place. And he, for example, he said, if it's in the shoulders, if you have a hard time showing this, he said one of the first things a baby does is to lift its head. Uh-huh. And if a baby has trouble lifting its head, the tension will be experienced in a shoulder and in your shoulders. And a metaphor for that in adult life would be if you have a lot of tension in your shoulders, it's hard keeping your head up. And, you know, for people who carry a lot of tension, they'll say, oh, yes, it is hard to keep my head up. He would also talk about the stomach. He would say the stomach is the place of nurturance, where if it's hard to get nurturance, if it's hard for you to receive it, to let it in or to find it, you're going to have a lot of stomach trouble. So you'll find the stomach will be the place.
Yes.
And then, of course, there are the genitals, which is an area of so much conflict.
Yes.
So here you have people now identify the physical source, and they will metaphorically or realistically, they're going to say, I feel it in my chest.
Yes.
What do you tell them to do? Do they...
Then we begin the process of what I would call inquiry. So I ask them to focus their attention into that place and starting right what I would call on the surface. Okay, what's it like? Describe it to me. How big is it? What size, what shape is it? What color is it? What's the surface texture like? I start to get them increasingly focused on that place, and then we try to take a journey into that place. So usually it's some kind of an object that they find in there, and we try to get through the surface layer to the inside, and on the inside is where they discover what it is that they've buried, whatever it is that they've split from, whatever trauma might be there, and they have to make direct contact with it in order to heal it. You can't heal it from your head, from thinking about it. You have to have direct contact with it.
Dale, because I know you're such a brave guy and you've done the work yourself, let's talk about what happened when you took this journey inside yourself to find it. I remember I had one of my great moments was feeling a split in my chest. And as I went in to feel it, I felt myself split down the middle, and the more I allowed myself to feel it, I felt two arms being pulled in two directions, and I was being split by two forces, and those forces represented both the love in me and the hatred in me.
Uh-huh.
And it was like by going into that spot, that one particular spot, I located that conflict and had to work with that. What's one that you might have worked with that you would have found inside yourself?
Well, I guess I'll start at the beginning, because I've done so much of this over the years, but the first thing that opened for me is, I guess, where I'll start. I was sharing with you earlier that I did a kind of primal therapy, and I was very, very split from my feelings. I think I cried twice in 20 years at this point, and I worked with a therapist where I would go and lie down on a mattress, and she would say, what are you feeling? And I would say something, and she'd say, 95% of the time, she'd say, that's a thought, not a feeling. What are you feeling? And finally, I did this thing called a personal intensive with her, where I did a minimum of 4 hours a day, 5 days a week for 3 weeks. And at the end of the first week, I experienced the pain of not being able to feel. And it was so excruciating that I cracked wide open and open to being an infant in my crib and looking up and seeing my mother, seeing in her eyes that she was not there. She was, I mean, physically there, but not emotionally or spiritually, and feeling the terror of being separated from the source. You know, my mother was my connection to the universe, and she wasn't there. So I became a baby, literally, for about 9 months after that. Every time I'd go in and do a session with her, or I was doing the same work with my wife at the time, and we would trade sessions, I would just go into this infant-like crying like a baby, reliving that over and over, until by grieving the loss of the mother I never had, I became my own mother.
This is Armand DeMille with Dale Goldstein. We're talking about his process called Heartwork. Dale, what a thing. You know, out of the mouths of babes, it's kind of amazing. You talk about a feeling. And you talk about a feeling of not being able to feel. Whoa. How many people do I know, and how many people do I know even listening right now, somebody who I told earlier today, be sure to listen in, who it's all thoughts, and the feeling is not there. And when you go down there, when you get under it, and you see, I can't feel anything. and you realize that this has been taken from you, that somebody's done a feelingectomy on you, that, you know, that it's kind of been removed and you're dead. That is such a profound, profound realization that it has all the suggestion, the inkling of a potential epiphany, you know. I mean, you can, if you go into that spot, if you yes. have the courage
yes.
to be aware of that, but who, you know, who wants to think about that? In fact, right now we've lost half our radio audience. Half of them are gone. They said, oh, I forgot, my water boiling on my stove, turned off the radio, because you can't talk about stuff like this on the radio. People find it too difficult. They want to hear Howard Stern. Well, if not Howard Stern, they want to hear Joyce Brothers or somebody else telling people about themselves. You can't feel. You can't feel. You've gone numb inside, but not dead. It's just numb, right?
That's right. Numb is the word. That is.
How do you break it? Because it's covering something. You know, that numbness is always, you're numb. If you get a pain in your foot, right? You hit your foot and it goes numb, it's because it's trying to take away the pain. So now, if we're going to go through our numbness, right?
Yep.
We got to be ready to feel the pain that's underneath it. And yep. that pain, like you said, of your mother wasn't there. Ooh, and yeah. you're a baby realizing that.
Yeah.
Could be enormous.
Yeah.
Isn't it better off just, you know, getting rich?
Well, most people seem to think so, but...
Yeah.
You know, some people.
That's why they sell lottery tickets. I mean, that's exactly why this world is filled with lottery tickets, because people don't want to feel the pain.
Yeah. I have two unanswered questions left. One of them is, why do people turn around when they turn around? You know, people can live their whole lives. They can go to their deathbeds without realizing how much they've been suffering. And then sometimes something opens for people and they say, I can't live with this anymore. I'm going to do whatever it takes to transform my life. I have no idea why that happens when it happens to people.
Well, sometimes it happens out of the pits, right? I mean, if you just, you're all the way down in the bottom of the abyss and you're just looking around and you just say it's either death or this.
Yes.
I'm either going to go through it or I'm just going to let myself end my life.
Yes.
That's one way, but that's not always the way, is it? You don't always have to go through the bottom.
No. I mean, I had a spontaneous kind of peak experience, I would call it, on my 24th birthday, where I felt fully alive again for the first time since I was 9 years old, and that was the beginning of my journey. I said, this is what I want. I'll do whatever I can do to learn how to live in this place, how to get back to it and live in it. So I don't know why that happened, but it did.
Where was your dad?
Where was my dad?
Yeah.
When I was 24?
Yeah.
at home doing what he always did. Why?
Was he there on your birthday?
No, he wasn't there. But interestingly, my father, after that experience and subsequent experiences and my having found my path, my father looked to me for guidance.
That's what I would imagine.
Yeah.
So the part of that was realizing dad is not dad. Realizing dad is not there. And then when that happens, we become, unfortunately, parents to our parents.
Yeah.
Now, that's a terrible thing. Because when you become a parent to your parent, that means you never are going to be a child. You got to give up ever hoping to be a child again.
It's part of growing up, isn't it?
Well, it is. But, you know, some people, some people become caretakers to their parents so early that they spend their lives without knowing it, that they're grieving the child inside
them.
That's
true.
You know, and it's a very difficult thing to go through. It's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're somebody who had a subprime mortgage and you are suddenly faced with that there's an escalation of your mortgages that some shyster mortgage company sold you, thinking that things were going to be fine, and you can't afford to keep your house going, and you've got three kids who have clothing that are tattered, and you suddenly find yourself out in the street because your house is being sold by the bank because you can't afford to keep the payment, and you're looking all around you and you say, how did I get myself in this mess? how did I get this? Here I am. I'm at the bottom of the heap. I'm in the gutter. I'm actually standing, sitting on the gutter. My wife doesn't want to know me anymore. She wants to leave me and go to live with her mother. The neighbors are looking down at me going, look what happened to him. I'm at the bottom. What do you say, Dale? What do you say to the guy? I mean, how bad could it be? Do you say give it up, quit? What do you say?
Well, what I'd say to that person is to trust yourself. Whatever it is that got you to where you were before you had this misfortune, you can use those gifts and abilities that you have to get you back to where you want to be in your life. Just trust what is inside of yourself and follow your path. It might take you years to dig yourself out of the hole that you find yourself in, but there's a wonderful Japanese saying, 7 times down, 8 times up. Follow your inner guidance, trust yourself, and you'll get where you need to be.
Wow, that's pretty profound because, you know, if you think about it, that's what happens when people get down in the dumps. They don't trust themselves any longer. They don't trust themselves, and once you don't trust yourself, you don't trust anybody else. You know, like there's this foolish thing that people believe, which is they say you can't love anybody unless you love yourself. I don't think that's true. I see a lot of love available out there without people loving themselves. But you can't really trust anybody if you don't trust yourself. That's more true. You might put your hands in the faith of somebody who's going to abuse you and then call that trust and then say, oh, I was abused. But if you don't trust yourself, you truly can't find somebody who is trustworthy. You know? So this idea, this concept of yours of I've lost everything, I can't make everything work, and you say, yes, but you got here. You made it this far. Even if nothing works, even if you're back to zero, you made it this far. Trust yourself. Trust that you're going to come through this. Those are great words, you know. Those are wonderful words. I wish that, you know, you, Dale, were walking around the streets of New York and seeing everybody and could say it to them. And probably with your intention and with your attention, with the way you are, people would get it from you. But it's hard to believe that, you know, that I'm trustworthy when I've made such a mess out of my life. What do I need to do to trust myself more?
You know, what's coming to me is, as I listen to you, I often say to people that, you know, they ask me, what's heart work really all about? And often I'll say, it's about learning how to move through fear. That the only thing that stops us in our lives is that we hit a wall of fear and we pull back. Because we're afraid of the fear. Once you know you can move through fear, nothing can stop you. So the guy sitting on the curb is afraid that he can't get back up again. Once you face that fear inside yourself, move through it, come out the other side, you know, whatever is possible for you as an individual, you can do.
Now, facing fear.
Yes.
Many people think that the way you face fear is you get rid of it.
Right.
No, that's
or jump
not,
out of an airplane.
Or, yes, right, counterphobically.
Right.
But facing fear is feeling fear.
Feeling it.
See, this is the thing that most people won't do. Most people don't even know how afraid they are.
That's true.
Most lovers in relationships, almost every dysfunctional relationship I ever see, every couple who comes to me and says, help me, Armand, you know, we're falling apart. The missing element is they're not recognizing their individual fears.
Yes.
I'm afraid. I'm afraid you're going to leave me. I'm afraid I'm not lovable. I'm afraid I can't make it work. I'm afraid nobody will ever love me. I'm afraid that you're going to, that I can't satisfy you. Fear. I'm afraid that I can't satisfy myself. I'm afraid I can't be here for you. I'm afraid I'm unlovable. All of those fears.
Yes.
And somehow you got to discover them, you know?
Yes. And, you know, courage doesn't mean that you have no fear. It means that you're willing to acknowledge your fear and be with it and work it through however long it takes. And sometimes I've had to deal with a lot of fear in my life, grew up with a lot of fear. And there was a period of time in my life, I do a lot of meditation, or historically I've done a lot of meditation. And there was a time in my life where every morning I would meditate until the fear came up, and then I would just be with it until I moved through it. Sometimes it would take a half an hour, sometimes it would take 2 hours, but I did that for a couple of years.
Can you give me an example of how the fear would come up? What would the fear be like? The fear.
It's. I'm glad you're putting it that way, because that's the way that I think of it. It's the fear with a capital F. There is fear, which is really about being split from what I would call your true nature. If you're split from who you really are, what you really are, there is fear. Whether you're acknowledging it or not, it exists. So the fear attaches itself to many things that we think we're afraid of. But ultimately, if you follow that fear back to where it originated, there's just fear. There's just this split that you were talking about before. There's just a split inside of us, and once we go into that split, that place inside where we don't feel whole, it's actually a hole that we have to go into for most people. They experience it as a hole. When we go into that hole, we come back home to ourselves, we don't feel split, and there is no fear anymore. I don't know if that explains it.
No, it certainly does, and it may... So whatever the fear is, if you could identify the fear as a feeling more than as I'm afraid of. Because what we're afraid of, you know, I'm afraid I can't pay the rent. I'm afraid of. Those are really thoughts. Those are really concepts. The fear itself is something worth feeling, and worth feeling to the point of trembling and saying, I'm going through this. I'm going to take this journey on. And you're right about courage, Dale. You know, I know most men I know are just so afraid to feel pain in any form. You know, it's like the difference between what men were originally given as training to become men, come out of adolescence. They were given places where they would feel pain, and they would have to go through the pain feeling it, not ignoring it or running away from it. The difference between a real human, a real grown-up man, and an adolescent boy is he willing to feel pain? See, men who don't feel pain are children. They're afraid to feel it. They're going to run from it. So being able to face it, you know, it's very hard to do on your own. Very, very hard to do, even with a book like this. The book, by the way, is Heartwork, which is really a very helpful guide by Dale Goldstein, G-O-L-D-S-T-E-I-N, with some beautiful illustrations and poetry in him as well. Dale is talking to us about getting everything you want, and he's not taking it the easy way. He's taking it the tough way. He's saying, look, you got to start off if you want to get that which you want, first find out who you is that's asking. Who is it that's asking the question, you know? Is it the you that's asking, or is it the frightened you that wants to just not be afraid? And that's a question that seems to be very important. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to play a piece of music by Todd Carter, and this is the music that comes as a CD with this book, Heartwork. And Dale Goldstein uses this in his meditations with people. And the CD actually comes with the book. It's kind of beautiful. So when we get back from our break, from our station ID, I'm going to play you a piece of this. It's quite remarkable. This is Eli. Thank you. This is live, and that is Todd Carter on an album that he doesn't make, he doesn't have. But it's in the back of the book, Heartwork, and Heartwork is the name of the book by Dale Goldstein, if you just tuned in. And if you just tuned in and heard this beautiful music, you're hearing music that is used as part of a meditative process, and this I think you call Dawn, right, Dale?
That's the title of the song, yeah. The process that this particular piece goes with I call unwinding. And unwinding is, you know, if you have a cat or a dog, you know that when they get stressed, their body just knows what to do to release the stress in it. We forget that we live in an animal body and our bodies know what to do to release the stress that we're holding, the tension that we're holding. So the process that I teach I call unwinding, and this is music that goes with it, that simply, it's a matter of allowing your body to do what it knows how to do to let go.
Well, how does your body know? I mean, give me an example of what your body knows what it is to do, because sometimes my body wants to crunch up. You know, sometimes I'm feeling a pull towards the middle. If you pay attention to your body and you pay attention to what you're feeling, sometimes it's like a pull towards the center.
Certainly.
You know?
Well, if you just go with that, and let your body go all the way with that, it will come to a place where there's a release. The problem is we usually fight our body's natural instinct. If it's to crunch up or whatever, we usually, you know, don't want to look foolish or something, so we fight what our body wants to do. But, you know, natural experiences in everybody's life of releasing tension are things like yawning and stretching and moaning and groaning and things like that.
How does this, and okay, so let's say you go through the identifying yourself, finding out what you've been hiding, running away from all your life, facing the pain that you didn't want to face, whatever the pain is, which could be, unfortunately, when you're alone, it's so easy to make up anything, and then that gets validated.
Yes.
My pain is that my parents never loved me. Well, wait a minute. I could take pain further back than that. my pain is that I ever left God in the first place.
Yes.
You know, I mean, we could go all the way back. According to what framework you're using.
Right.
My pain could be, if you're seeing a therapist who specializes in abused children, my pain was that my father was an alcoholic. My pain was that my mother was three generations of, you know, mystics. You know, so you could stop anywhere. How do you know where to stop? And even the therapist tends to stop you where they have their pain.
Exactly.
So how do you ever figure it out?
You know, hopefully I've faced enough of my own pain that I'm not afraid to go wherever the person needs to go.
That's yours.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're in Rochester.
True. But I do workshops all over the place.
Well, you know, I know what you're saying because, you know, here we teach that here. We
yes.
teach it, but it's still for the average person trying to learn. If they don't go into a therapy itself, can you go through this? Can you really make this journey by yourself? Can you really find it? I can think of people who I wish they would go get away from their words. I wish some people would go sit up on a mountaintop somewhere or go get a place away from everyone else. I remember in 1988, I had a house in Fire Island that I had rented, and I stayed there for a year. Not barely talking to anybody, just to find out, just to see what it would be like not to have all the fame and fortune and all the other stuff I had around me. No fortune, I had a lot of fame. but it was like, but the shack and the fact that it was a chance to find out and a chance to feel whatever I was going to feel. I had some very good equipment. I had been trained. I had
yes.
been through a lot of therapy. I had a lot of belief in myself. For the average person, how do they do this?
There's a wonderful book by, I don't know if you know Pema Chodron.
Yes.
She has a number of wonderful books, and they all have great titles, and one of them is Start Where You Are. So everybody's always starting where they are. So somebody who's just beginning the journey will find someone who can help them at that point and take them to the next point. And then they'll graduate from that person, and they'll find someone else who can take them to the next place. And ultimately, we do have to make the journey by ourselves. In the end, a guide can only guide you, but you have to do the work. You have to face the pain. You have to face the emptiness, the aloneness, you know, the what you might call existential issues or spiritual issues. But it does help, obviously, to have a guide along the way to keep you from straying too far off the path and to make it safe, to create a safe container, because they've made the journey. They're not afraid of you going where you have to go, so they let you know by their being, by their presence, that it's okay to go where you need to go and that they'll be with you as far as they can.
Well, it's pretty hard to find that in a friendship. So what most people do is they go to relationships.
Yeah.
And I think the struggle to find love very often is the desire to find a partner with whom you could face your fears, with whom you could go through your pains. I think very often what we're trying to do when we're looking for what we think is love and romance is looking for the kind of shoulder you could really lean on. I mean, that's the beauty of love. That's the beauty of a love relationship. Having somebody strong enough to be there for you, you know, that's a great thing. Now, but not having a person only be strong for you while you're always weak. It's kind of this mutual strength. I think a real love relationship can really lend itself to that, but not if the relationship is focused on how many times did you take me out last week? When's the last time we went to a movie? When you forgot my birthday? Not that kind of thing. But let's face our pain together. Let's go through it.
You know, when I work with couples, there are a few things that I say to all couples. One of them is that relationships are a matter of multiplication, not addition. So two half people don't make a whole. Two half people make a quarter of a relationship. Two whole people make a whole relationship. So the degree to which we're whole in ourselves is the degree to which we can create a whole relationship with another person. Unfortunately, I think many people are unconscious of their neediness, and they enter into relationships looking for the other person to fill their emptiness, to fill their neediness, to get rid of that for them. And that's actually where I think most relationships break down, where there's a collision of unconscious and unexpressed needs.
I like your math. A half a person meets a half a person, and when they get together, you do the multiplication, that you really wind up with a quarter of a person. So now you get less than what you started with. Did you ever feel that way? You get into a relationship, and you wind up with less than you had when you walked in. So a half a person gets to get together with another half a person, you wind up with a quarter of a person. A person, a full person, gets together with another full person, you wind up with at least one full person. But if three people get together, I'm only kidding.
That's another show.
Right, that's another show. We can. You know, is there any room for fun in life?
Absolutely.
It's such a serious thing you're talking about, though.
You know, but when you get to the other side, you get what you really, really want, which is the joy and the peace and the love that you've been looking for your whole life. That's what's on the other side of fear. In your wholeness is your joy, is the peace, is the love.
If that's on the other side, then you wouldn't need anybody.
It's true. You don't need anybody, but you enjoy other people.
Well, what's it like to not need other people but enjoy them?
Free. Mm. It's totally free.
Mm. You went through both, didn't you?
Certainly.
You went through the needy one.
Certainly.
Right? Biggest pain of your life.
Certainly.
You mind?
Do you mind
talking about it? Yeah, because it's something
not at all.
That I think people could value, could learn from. Most of us go through relationships. We have these wonderful relationships that we think are going to be forever, and they are so intense, and then you lose that relationship. When you lose that relationship, it rips your heart apart.
Yes. Well, it happened to me about 10 years ago. My wife of 21 years told me that she said, you know, I've been under the thumb, so to speak, of men my whole life. First my father, then my boyfriend, then my first husband, then you. And I don't want to be in relationship with a man anymore. And let's put it this way, I wasn't willing to have a sex change operation. So we separated, got divorced, and that was the most painful thing in my life. And what I did was I let myself experience the pain. And I cried every morning when I woke up, went to bed crying, created a space in my house, like a womb where I could go in, and created a bed that was soft enough to just hold me when I lay down in it. And I just grieved for 6 months every day. And then one night I grieved all night long. I didn't not grieve. And in the morning I woke up. Sun was up. I woke up. In the morning, the sun came up, and a little bird was chirping outside my window, and there was joy in my heart again, and I started the next phase of my life. And by the way, as an aside, my friends told me that afterwards, in all the work that I'd done on myself for 25 years up to that point, I grew more in those 6 months than I had in the 25 years prior to that, just by giving myself over to the natural healing of grieving this huge loss.
There are many losses that people go through, some of them relationship losses like that. Others could be the death of someone close to you.
Yes.
And how do you handle it? How do you go through it?
I encourage people to feel it, to just feel the loss. There is a natural progression of healing that takes place. In some regard, grieving is a doorway to becoming whole again. I don't know if I can explain it better than that, but there's a kind of hardness that is created when we separate from ourselves, and grieving softens us in those places where we've become hard. So I encourage people to let themselves go through the grieving, and essentially come back home to themselves. I think I'd like to relate a little experience. Somebody that I worked with at one point who came to me and said his issue was that he felt like he was a failure in his life. And we talked for about 6 months and finally circled back to the issue that he came with. And I said to him, have you ever let yourself really experience failing? And he said, sure, I do every day. And I said to him, really? Do you really let yourself experience it? And he said, actually, no. No, I've never let myself experience failing. So I invited him to allow himself to experience failing. And he lay down on the floor and let go. He surrendered to the experience of failing. The way he described it was, I'm inside my fear. So this was a guy who had gotten his degree in photography from the Chicago Art Institute, never practiced photography, went to work as an apprentice with a man named Wendell Castle, one of the foremost wood craftsmen in the world, who was at the School of American Craftsmen at Rochester Institute of Technology. He apprenticed with him for a couple of years, became proficient enough to go off on his own, and then decided he didn't really want to do that. He became an apprentice with Albert Paley, one of the foremost metal workers in the world. Had been apprenticing with him for a year and a half when he came to see me. Truth was, he didn't want to be a photographer. He didn't want to be a woodworker. He didn't want to be a metal worker. What he really wanted was to be an architect. But he was so afraid that if he tried and failed, he wouldn't have any reason to live anymore, so he never tried. After he went through his fear of failing and experienced fear from the inside, he wasn't afraid of fear anymore. He put together a portfolio, applied to the two top architecture grad schools in the country, Yale and Berkeley, without an undergraduate architecture degree, got into Yale, struggled very hard, you know, competing with the sons and daughters of the top architects in the world, but got through, got a job, eventually worked his way up to the head of the building and architecture department for the University of Colorado, married a beautiful woman, has three lovely daughters, turned his life around all because of that one moment where he faced that fear and let himself experience it fully.
My guest is Dale Goldstein, who has written the book Heartwork. Now, Dale, you're a licensed clinical social worker. You're a scientist as well. If you have a person who's listening to this program and they're taking medication for being paranoid schizophrenic, right, and they're taking this medication and they have fears that they're always putting under control, and they are, when they fear, they feel overly frightened, you know, and they're always worried about things, and they got a shrink who's telling them, it's in your mind, don't worry about it, let it go. Don't believe it, don't go. You're saying to people, no, go inside it. And you're saying, you know, have your schizophrenic episode. And, I mean, what are you saying? Because it would seem like, as a practitioner, as somebody who knows that there are different kinds of people, some people couldn't handle this.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. Absolutely. I would definitely go very slowly with someone who had a psychotic nature and absolutely have them stay on their medication and work closely with their psychiatrist. I would.
Well, no psychiatrist is going to help somebody go through feelings.
No.
I mean, it's against...
Rare, it's against,
you can't get your license. They take your license away if you help people go through feelings. Medium rare.
Yeah.
But the real essence is, I think if you're frail, this is not work for the frail. And if you're frail emotionally, meaning if you've ever been hospitalized, if you've ever had the kind of episode where you've hurt yourself, if you've cut your body, if you've done things to yourself out of your own frustration, when facing your fear, you got to have an ally there. Don't do it without professional help. This is one of those things you don't practice without having somebody around.
I'm really glad you clarified that.
But if you're somebody who is dull, depressed, who is living somewhere within the range of normalcy, you know, without having breakdowns, and you feel like you're, you know, you just can't seem to get that piece of life that you want, but have not had breakdowns and frustrations and, you know, kind of losing your mind stuff, then this is an approach. that will help you start dissembling some of those things that are keeping you away. So it's really work for the sounder mind. I don't want to end the show without talking about freeze frame because it's an important concept. Let's talk about that for a moment.
Okay. Freeze frame is a tool that came to me. It goes like this. We all have places where we do things that are pain-producing, either for ourselves or for other people. And what I teach people to do is to go back into that incident, slow things down like they're watching a movie or a video, and watch it in slow motion, paying particularly close attention to the thoughts and the feelings they were having as they approached the moment where things broke down, either as the, so to speak, perpetrator or the victim of that particular breakdown. And when they get to the frame just before the incident occurred, I ask them to freeze the frame and just sit in that moment and be very attentive to what's going on inside them. What were they feeling that they didn't want to feel that was too painful or too frightening, so they kind of dumped it on the other person? Or if they're the other person who got dumped on, what happened in the moment that they got hit? I call it taking the hit. So you take the hit. Instead of fighting back, which is our natural tendency because we don't want to feel the pain that someone else has given to us, take the hit and see what's getting hit. Who is it that you think you are? Who are you taking yourself to be? Or what is the trauma that's getting reactivated in you that's getting hit? So it's a matter of slowing things down and looking very closely at what's actually going on so that you can learn, so that the next time you hit a wall like that, you don't have to recreate the trauma for yourself or others. I don't know if that explained it well, but that's the technique.
It sure does. You know Al Pesso, by the way? Do you know Pesso Motorworks? It's very interesting. No. You just practically spoke his words. Heart work is, if people wanted to learn more about this, they could have awakentheheart.org. Where's the place to go?
Yes, www.awakentheheart.org.
AwakenTheHeart1Word.org, and this is Armand DeMille. Our guest has been Dale Goldstein. Happy to have you here, Dale.
Thank you. Very it's been really to good to be here.
I hope you can be back in New York a little bit, CB. So what we have here is a guided meditation with, a book. It's a guided meditation, and it has a CD which allows you some music. So we're going to use this time to play you a little bit more of this music that gets included with it, which I think is just beautiful. Thanks for being with us, Dale. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. Do send me an email. If you want to hear a copy of, if you want to hear today's show, you can go to thepositivemind.com. And you can send me an email through that as well, thepositivemind.com or wbai.org. Nice to be with you, Dale. Nice to be with you, friends. Bye-bye for now.
Rejecting the Corporate Empire. On September 17th and 18th,